The thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
Can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode.
Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go,
no! It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3. KTAR.
And welcome back to another rousing edition of the Computer Corner. It is the data doctors in the house, along with Lewis from Mac Media.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
We got the Windows side of your world covered. We got the Mac side of your world covered this week. We actually had some discussions about the relative difference in safety for the Mac OS last week. We timed it wrong because you had a situation out of town and couldn't be here, so we'll kind of carry on that conversation too for anybody that that was involved in that last week. There's some lingering questions in our inbox about, you know, are Macs really safer? Are they not? You know, what are the ins and outs? So we'll continue that conversation.
Well, I was getting some text messages to the iPhone while I was out of state saying that they're out there razzing you on the on the radio.
Oh, I'm sure Brandon took liberties since you weren't here to say lots of things, but. Today's theme, if you will, and again, the theme is simply a way for us to bring you structured information that may help you understand more about the world of technology, more about the world of computers and the internet, and how it may impact you, and some things that you may have not have known about, that now that you know, you can be a more smarter internet user. Yeah?
Absolutely.
More gooder. We're going to talk about something that we actually announced, or we kind of started talking about a year and a half ago, something called a botnet. That's a network of computers that have been kind of in the background, taken over. They've become what's called a zombie. So it's just sitting there doing nothing. There's a little agent that's been installed in the computer, and at some given point in time, the guy that basically controls the botnet, and so the network of these zombie computers, and there could be 100 of them, could be 10,000 of them, with a couple clicks of his mouse can get all 10,000 of them to do whatever it is he wants them to do, which could be spread the virus to other machines, send out, you know, each machine sends out 10 copies of a spam message times 10,000. You can see how that
and so these helps. These botnets are created with Trojans.
Well, there are a number of ways that a botnet agent can get into your computer. Everything from a file that you download in a file sharing network to some of the drive-by download malicious sites that are out there, an email attachment, a hey, check this out, you know, through a social networking site. Any number of ways that the botnets can, the botnet agent can make it into your computer. The thing that's particularly important for people to understand is that these botnets are designed to be invisible and designed to do everything they can to avoid detection from you personally as the user and your antivirus and anti-spyware programs. And they have the upper hand because they know how these programs work and they pretty much know how people react and they know how to hide from these things.
Well, and since they're almost laying dormant, they're not really... You're really not seeing any of the effects until they go and they put that into play.
Right. Now we're going to get into some of the technical discussions here. The guy that controls the botnet is called a bot herder.
Uh-huh.
It's a really, except for the fact that it's a really nasty side effect of the, you know, the nasty underbelly of the internet. It's pretty fascinating how this whole system works, and we're going to go into detail about it so you understand why they're doing it, how they're doing it, and how you can A, protect yourself, and B, try to figure out, you know, is my machine one of these zombies, and I didn't really even realize it? Because
so this person sounds like a puppet master.
Right. They call them bot herders.
Bot herders, okay.
So they're spreading this infection out on the internet, trying to get as many computers infected with this little agent as possible. These little agents then, on a periodic basis, call home and check into the control center, if you will, and it's all going on behind the scenes. It uses something called IRC, which we're going to explain a little bit later because that's our Geek Speak of the Week. And basically, it's like pushing a button and activating all of these sleeping computers and say, okay, you know, everybody rise up and, you know, like zombies, go attack this or go do this or whatever. They can do whatever they want. It's such a powerful mechanism for spreading viruses and malware and spam that it is the most common way for us to get all of this stuff these days. It's so successful from the standpoint of a business model, because these guys that create these botnets then sell access. They say, I'll let you use my network of zombie computers for 20 minutes to spread your spam or whatever, and I'll charge you X dollars. That's why they're doing it, because there's a very clear path to revenue. And you may be unknowingly participating in one of these networks, not because you said I wanted to do this, but because of something you, or heaven forbid you have teenagers in your house, so, you know, something that was downloaded, installed, clicked on, accessed, all the things that we keep, you know, talking about, danger, danger, danger. These guys have gotten really good at sneaking into your computer, and again, you're not going to even know it's there unless you're specifically looking for certain things that are kind of out of the norm. So we're going to talk about those things. We're going to try to arm you with some tools. We do have some very very specific steps that we're going to give you for those of you that are moderately technical, that know how to use the command line in Windows. We're going to give you some tools that you can use, and then you can use that with your mom's computer and your friend's computers, and, you know, just get out there and try to help detect these
infected machines. You're going to give me something with a graphical interface, right?
Oh, no. we could, but what fun is that? We've got to get people onto command lines.
Well, now that you've scared the bejesus out of everybody.
Good.
Let's come up with a way to help them out. Huh?
No, absolutely. We're going to spend the first 15 minutes scaring you, and then spend the rest of the show trying to give you the tools so that you understand. It's like anything else. I mean, you know, when you first start driving, a lot of stuff is scary because it's just stuff you don't understand and realize, and, you know.
Sure. All the unknowns.
One wrong move and you absolutely actually can die, right? So does that keep us from becoming very good drivers? Generally not. Generally, we learn and we take precautions. And the same thing applies on the information superhighway, if you will. You have to learn the rules of the road. You have to understand the dangers. You have to understand why these dangers are permeating the internet and how you can avoid them. But if you don't get involved at this level, you don't listen to shows like this, you don't understand this, then you become one of those clueless people that is infected, that is one of these zombies, and you're actually helping spread spam. All that spam you're complaining about, your very machine may be one of the machines that's sending spam messages out on a daily basis without your knowledge. So again, we're going to give you some tips and tricks on how to manage that, how to avoid it, and how to look at your machine and see, you know, is there a possibility I have it? 602-277-5827. That's the phone number. A couple lines open, 602-277-5827. Or join us online at datadoctors.com/radio, and you'll see all of the resources, including I've got a ton of different video tutorials that really go into depth about botnets and how they work and how this whole thing works. It's graphical. So if you have one of those inquiring minds and you really want to understand it, or if you just have a passing interest in understanding, these videos, I think, are very easy to understand, and they can explain exactly how this happens, why it happens, how you can detect it, those kinds of things. So 602-277-5827. It's Ken with Data Doctors, Lewis with Mac Media, here to talk to you about your computers. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Computer Corner. Ken with Data Doctors here, along with Lewis from Mac Media, to talk about anything and everything technology-wise. Cell phones, scanners, printers, computers, laptops. Today we're focusing in on something called a botnet. It's a network of compromised computers. And unfortunately, many, many of you listening to this show right now are inadvertently participating as a zombie on a botnet because your machine's been infiltrated by one of these agents. And it's not necessarily jumping up and, I mean, it's designed not to jump up and, you know, let you know you've been infected. It does its very best, and it does a very good job of evading users and your antivirus and anti-spyware programs, because it's snuck in through some trick that was played. They refer to it as social engineering. They got somebody in your household to click on a file, to download a file, to open a file, to do something that looked like, you know, it was going to play a movie or it was a piece of music or a new program or whatever. And hidden within that is this little agent that planted itself on your computer and very cleverly disguised itself from your antivirus and anti-spyware programs. The antivirus programs are really good at detecting the Trojans or the programs that infect you that allow the bot agents to get in, botnet agents to get into your computer. But once it's in, it operates at a level that's different than normal code and viruses, so they're not as good at detecting these things. If you have a firewall program and it's designed to alert you to anything that's going out of your machine, anytime your machine tries to connect to the internet and it's not a pre-approved process like your email, like your web browser, it can jump up and alert you to the fact that something's trying to reach out onto the internet, and do you want this to happen or not? Unfortunately, the guys that write the botnet agents realize that those firewalls are capable of doing that. So what have they done? They've changed the connection methods so that it looks like a standard web browsing request.
Okay, because I've noticed some things on the Mac platform. I use a program called Little Snitch. And Little Snitch is always giving you bits and pieces of information saying, yeah, this is coming in, this is going out. And it all looks normal when you look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did they rewrite this so when it's going out, it looks like one of the applications that you use on a daily basis?
Well, if it detects it as something going out, it's going to grab it, and whatever coding it can detect, it will say, hey, this is something, something, whatever file, and it won't look like a normal browsing session. The problem is, you've told your firewall it's okay for things to go through port 80 or what have you. And I don't want to get too technical here.
Sure.
So the ports that have already been opened up for, like, web browsing, those kinds of things, they're simply using those ports that are already open. In other words, you don't want your program, every time you go to the internet, you open up your browser, you don't want your program, your computer, your security software to say, okay, do you want me to allow Internet Explorer or Firefox to open? Of course I do. Okay, it's been approved. Well, that uses a specific path out of your computer, and so these botnets now, these agents, have figured out if we just follow behind that, then the firewall programs won't detect us.
Sure.
They're very, very good. Once they're in your machine, they're very good at evading all of the security programs that you typically rely upon to help you with these things. So, you know, on one hand, we want to get you aware of the situation. On the other hand, we're fighting an uphill battle here because they have the upper hand. They know all the stuff that's out there that we're all using for security, and they know how to get past them because they can sit there in their little workshops and work on it and work on it until they figure out, okay, this is how we evade Norton antivirus. This is how we evade McAfee. This is, you know, so on and so forth. So it is the reality, but, again, throughout the show, we're going to give you tips that will give you a better chance of understanding what's going on in your computer. First up on the phones, though, is Lewis, the other Lewis, the remote
yep.
Lewis.
You, yeah, Ken.
You have some issue with your CD-ROM autoplay, I understand.
Yes, because when you put a CD-ROM in, ordinarily, it automatically plays whatever the maker of the CD-ROM decided it should. And that could just as well be some malware, spyware, or something that captures your computer and puts it on a botnet. And I have tried, we can go through if you want to, how to defeat the autoplay.
Well,
I just want it to open the menu, I don't want it to autoplay.
Well, the easiest way to disable autoplay is to hold the left shift key down as you close the CD-ROM drawer. Press and hold the left shift key down. That tells Windows don't autoplay whatever's going on here. That tells it temporarily not to run autoplay, because autoplay is very helpful for a lot of different types of discs, whether it's music or movies. And so permanently disabling it, I don't think, is a good idea. So if it's a CD-ROM that you want to make sure that it does not run the autoplay, just hold the left shift key down and see if that takes care of it.
If you put a Sony movie in there, though, they can install a thing that will, without your permission, tell Sony what you're doing.
Yeah, that
movie playing and so forth.
Yeah, that came out a couple of years ago. That was a big black eye on Sony's part. We're gonna go to break here. We'll talk a little bit more about autoplay and some of these other ways that these guys are trying to infiltrate you, and including, hey, do you have a digital picture frame? Was it made in China?
I'm sure it was.
You might be freaked out when you hear what we talk about next. And we're working our way through another wonderful, beautiful, amazing Saturday afternoon here in the Great Southwest. All of you, of course, that's only going to be for another 4 or 5 hours, and then I guess the thunderstorms come in from California. Another import from California. Those of you listening in those cold, dreary climates, we feel for you. So I guess it's all the more reason to stay inside and listen to the Computer Corner, huh?
And if you really fell for him, you would have moved out of Arizona.
No. No, I can feel for him. I'm not going to move away from this wonderful world here.
However,
remember,
I'm from New Hampshire, so.
Okay, but remember, they give us all kinds of grief during the summer.
They do.
This is our time.
3 months.
We are talking about the rampant use of what are called botnets to spread viruses, infections, and spam, and how your computer actually could be participating in one of these botnets as a zombie, and you don't even know it. So we're going to get into more detail, but before we went to break, we were talking to Lewis, and he was pointing out the fact that if something auto-plays, which is it's a convenience feature. Here we go again. Something that the folks at Microsoft created as a convenience for us as users is being exploited by the bad guys. So the auto-run or the auto-play feature, where you basically stick a disc in, a CD-ROM. I think most people are used to that. You put in a music disc, boom, your music program opens up. That's cool. You put in a DVD, your DVD program opens up and starts to play the movie, right? This
sure.
is good stuff. If it's a new CD that you're going to install a program on, it usually launches the install program and allows you to, you know, click on next, next, next. I agree, you know, ignore everything that's in the whole agreement thing. I agree and continue on. What the bad guys are doing is, are creating malicious code that resides on various types of media. So everybody's familiar with the fact that this auto-run, auto-play stuff is pretty common on CDs and DVDs. But did you know a flash drive, you know, the little memory sticks that you use to make copies, if that has an auto-run or auto-play feature on it, or excuse me, if it has the file that tells Windows to automatically run this, that's another way to infect people. You can actually get the infection. So now the bad guys have figured out if they can spread across all the different medias that you have and put this auto-run thing on the flash drive, if you stick that flash drive into your friend's computer, it's going to infect your friend's computer.
Well, I think initially that was more of a marketing ploy. So put the flash drive in your computer, and then a sales pitch pops up.
Well, again, it's a non-emotional function that has benefits to users that the bad guys are taking advantage of. When it comes to the picture frames, it's happened on more than one occasion now, and it's all been tracked back to factories in China. And China, let's face it, China is where most of this stuff's being made these days. They have found on multiple occasions that the factories that were doing quality control tests for these picture frames, because if you think about it, if you understand picture for these picture frames, they're nothing more than just another memory storage device, okay? So they have the same kind of memory that a flash drive would have built into them. So if that device comes in contact with an infected computer and the infected computer puts its infection on the memory in the picture frame, guess what happens? It gets shipped to the U.S. You plug it into your machine to start loading your pictures onto the picture frame, la-di-da, boom, next thing you know, you just got infected with something else.
Well, and you've even seen that with some of the major manufacturers out there with some of their software applications before, having viruses bundled within their own disks and
sure.
not even know it and shipping it out.
It does happen. So, obviously the Chinese manufacturers are, now that they're aware that this kind of thing is happening, hopefully they're going to get more diligent about making sure this stuff doesn't get on this equipment. But so understanding that that's a potential threat, here's one way to at least minimize or mitigate one way of infecting yourself with a digital picture frame. Don't plug it into your computer directly. Take a memory card, put it into your computer, copy the files that you want to put on your picture frame onto the memory card, and either run the memory card in the picture frame or copy it off of the picture, the memory card onto the picture frame's memory.
Yeah, and most of these picture frames have the ability to take cards in various different formats directly into them. So
correct. Now, if, depending upon the malicious software, if the picture frame is infected and you put the memory card into the picture frame to run, there's a possibility that once you put it in there and it starts to run, the infected files will make their way onto the memory card, and then the next time you put the memory card into your computer, you risk the possibility of an infection. The difference is it won't be an auto run like it would be when you put the picture frame in. When you plug your picture frame in, the computer says, oh, this is a new device, and it looks to see, hey, is there something I need to run? Whereas if you, with a just a memory card, typically it's not going to do that, again, unless, and this is where it gets all, you know, this big gray area of what can be, if the auto run information makes it onto
the card,
the next time you plug it into your computer, it's going to auto run, and again, we got the same problem.
Well, it's because typically the card's going, do you want to access the card?
Right.
Whereas, yeah, some of these other autoplay features. Just quickly, too, on the Mac platform, when it comes to autoplay with CDs and DVDs and things of that nature, that's located in your system preferences under CDs and DVDs. And typically, the way I have my stuff set is to always ask what to do when I put that particular device or media inside my computer, so that way it doesn't choose for me.
You get to choose.
So if there was something on there that was going to cause havoc on your computer system, at least you have the choice of going and launching that yourself.
Yeah, so as long, it's still going to infect you the next time you run it manually, but I understand what you're saying. And you can
I'll take the onus upon myself.
And you can do the same thing on the Windows side. Now, how do you protect yourself from all the stuff we talked about? A, first and foremost. B, second and foremost. C, third and foremost. First and foremost, all of these updates that you keep hearing about for Windows, for your antivirus program, for your anti-spyware program.
Service Pack 27.
Service packs. All the... What they're doing with these service packs and updates is they're saying, okay, we discovered a new way that the hackers are sneaking into Windows. So in order to block that out, you have to load this update. Okay? And that's why, and every, the first, is it the first or second Tuesday? I think the first Tuesday of every month is Patch Tuesday for Microsoft. So everything that's accumulated that's not critical in nature gets released on that Tuesday. Anything that they discover that's critical, they'll release right away.
Immediately.
And that's predicated that they on them coming up with a patch, because sometimes they discover something and go, oh, my goodness, we don't have a solution for this thing, and they got to scurry around and come up with some kind of a patch. That's one of the reasons why you need to stay on top of this stuff, because within hours, and certainly within 24 hours, of an exploit being discovered in Windows, the guys that are out there that want to get into your computer realize their time to turn is very short. They're working very hard to create exploits to try to take advantage of those holes before people patch them. And so what used to take 6 or 8 months for this stuff to come out and start infecting people, in a 24-hour cycle, it can be discovered, and that stuff's out on the Internet looking to infect people. It's called a zero-day exploit. That's where we're at today.
Now, have you ever seen a feature of an OS disabled temporarily because of something like that, because they couldn't come up with a patch immediately?
Oh, yeah, no, a lot of times they'll tell you, turn this off or disable, and that's again, you trusted resources and technology. We try to do what we can to scrape through all the warnings and hype and everything and try to bring through our newsletter weekly, here are real threats that you should pay attention to. The other stuff, we say it's too technical and don't worry about it. So we try to, and that's one of the reasons why we recommend that if you want to stay up to speed and not have to be a nerd or a geek or, you know, just totally into this thing, we try to dumb it down and make it easy for you to understand through our newsletter. And we filter what we see all week long and all these warnings from CERT and from, you know, Microsoft and everybody, and say, okay, well, that only applies to a very small percentage of people, and it's kind of rare, so we're not going to talk about it. The stuff that we know has a potential to impact most people out there, and there's a way for you to do something about it. It's the other thing is, we don't like to talk about stuff where there's, okay, here's a problem, but nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
We usually try to wait until we see, okay, here's the problem, and they found the solution, here's the solution. So check that out at our website, datadoctors.com/radio. You'll see this week's offerings, and if you click on the free help center there, you'll see a place where you can, on the right-hand side, subscribe to our newsletter. If you want to see what it looks like, there's archives up there, so you can clearly see what's up and what's not.
Should we help somebody on the lines?
Let me. This one looks like it might be a quick and dirty here. Let's, David, you've got a question about registering a domain name?
Yes. I wanted to do it, but I heard that, you know, well, you have to buy one, and so nobody else can have it, that kind of thing. Where's a good place to start?
Well, you domain names are unique. So I own datadoctors.com.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Nobody else can have that.
Yes, okay? That's what I was looking
for. So then you have to go, well, you have to go find... Well, you have to know what you want, and then you have to have a way to figure out, is it available, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Well, I mean, there's a number of different resources out there. The original place that you did it was Network Solutions. If you go to NSI.com.
Okay.
Okay. That is they're the ones that actually were the original holders of all of the Internet numbers, and they were the registry in the early days.
And if you're into the risky Super Bowl commercials,
well, I was going to say here in especially, I mean, they're based in Scottsdale, but they're obviously now the number one domain registration company in the world is GoDaddy.
Yeah, I heard that too. That's what I.
So if you don't have a problem,
GoDaddy, like, then I just wanted to hear you guys' opinion.
Yeah, if you don't have a problem, like, I guess there was a church group that found out that their web developer was hosting their sites through GoDaddy, and they, you know, up in arms, and they said, no, we don't want to do business with them because of their commercials. So if you have an issue with GoDaddy's commercials and you don't feel like you want to give them money because of their taste in commercials, then, you know, whatever. I mean, it's to each his own. Then you can look at Network Solutions. But from the standpoint of, I mean, it definitely has very aggressive pricing. They have a lot of resources for people that don't know anything about the Internet to build their own websites.
A lot of email hosting.
Sure, all of it. Whether you're a business or a small business or a big business, or they've got a lot of tools for somebody that's just getting started. I think a lot of people that really know what they're doing will use them for domain registration. They won't use them for all the other tools. And it's, you know, primarily because they're cheap. So, I mean, it's you know, one of those two, NSI.com or GoDaddy.com. And for all those people that said, GoDaddy, what do they do? That's what they do. And, I mean, obviously these ads are working, so I'm not sure, you know.
So once I registered, I own it, like, and I have,
well, you,
I own
you,
the name.
You
so
have to, you have to,
or,
well, you have to pay for that registration year after year.
Yeah, it's kind of like car registration, in a way.
Oh, is it?
The more years you purchase, the lower your yearly is.
Well, and there's some other issues, though, but I'm gonna put you on hold because this is very important stuff that I want to make sure anyone else that's in that situation, there's some key mistakes that you make when you're a novice when it comes to registering domains. So, David, hold tight. We're going to talk to you on the other side of the break. It is the Computer Corner. Ken with Data Doctors, Lewis from Mac Media, back right after this. Thanks for joining us here on the Computer Corner. It's Ken Colburn with the Data Doctors and Lewis from Mac Media as we talk about computers, technology. This week we're talking about botnets and infections and all kinds of goodies. Before we went to break, though, David was asking about domain registration and we're going to talk about different places where you can go to get that done. But before we went to break, I said there's a couple of key mistakes, though, that people have made in the past that has actually spawned a whole kind of black market, if you will, for domains. There are people out there that have software and systems that are constantly tracking domain name registration. So let's say you go and register your domain and you have it and you register for a year. Their software is constantly watching to see that if you forget to re-register your domain, I mean, like within minutes of it expiring, they go in and register and basically grab that domain name
and then sell it to you for a premium.
Well, they're going to try to hold you hostage.
That's not good.
No. So if this is a domain that you know absolutely unequivocally you're going to use for many years, doing a multi-year registration not only will save you money, but instead, if you do a five-year registration instead of a one-year, that's five times that you won't have to worry about, ooh, I screwed up. I forgot. I didn't respond. Whatever.
That sounds good.
When you register, they will tell you when this is going to expire. Don't rely solely on the registrar to be your reminder, if you will. Whatever you use as your reminder system, put a note in there about 30 days before the registration, you know, big exclamation marks, everything, to remind you, re-register, re-up on the domain. Because there are a lot of companies out there just waiting for you to make a misstep. Because what they're going to do is they're going to pay, you know, some nominal amount to register your domain. And they know that you're likely going to be willing to pay substantially more to get that domain back. Because you spent 5 years, 2 years, whatever, building up an audience and whatever, right?
Yes.
So remember that. It's a very key piece. There's a whole industry out there dedicated to take advantage of people that aren't paying attention.
That's what I heard, yes. And then they're out there to, you know, you got to buy it back.
Well, they, yeah, if they're successful in doing this because you forgot and you screwed up and didn't re-register, there's nothing really, I mean, that's the way it works. Your registration expired. Is now that domain name is available to anybody else in the world. The only exception is, like, if you have a trade name and you own the national trademark, like we own the national trademark for Data Doctors. So if somebody tried to do that with ours, even though it expired, I'd have some other recourse. Oh. If it's Joe's, you know, whatever,
here's
website, and it's not if it's not a national registered trademark, you're not going to have much chance.
Yes, I trademarked the name of the product.
Is the domain name available?
No, I haven't done the domain name.
No, I'm
I
saying
trademarked the name of what I want the domain to be.
Well, I understand you have your product domain name, right? If somebody else already has that domain name and they can show that they've used this trade name for many years or you know whatever period of time it is, it doesn't matter that you have the trademark because that's you know they had this before you had the trademark.
And don't give us the name over the air because one of our savvy customers may go and register
yeah,
that before you do.
Yeah, before you get off the phone.
Exactly. So one of the first things you can do is see if that's available, whether you go to GoDaddy or the Network Solutions. That's
uh-huh.
The first thing you can do is they'll ask you what name would you like to register, and they'll tell you whether it's available or not. If it's not available and it's owned by somebody else, sometimes you can bid or ask that person if you could buy it from them, and a lot of times they'll broker that for you as well. So all is not lost if the name that you want to use is taken. There's still a possibility you can buy it from whomever. It'll just cost you, obviously, a lot more than just registering a new domain. All right?
So that's Network.
Networks, NSI.com or GoDaddy.com. It really depends on. Take a look at both websites. It's pretty obvious the difference
good.
In the two companies.
All right. Thank you for your help.
All right. Take care, David.
Bye.
And don't forget, re-register, keep those registrations active, because if not, those guys that are looking to snag those domains, they will, and they'll come knocking and go, hey, would you like your domain back for a cool $1,000 or whatever it is? They'll size you up and try to basically hijack you. So don't let them do it. Stay out of there. Ken and Lewis back after this.
The thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
But can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode.
Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go,
whoa! It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3. KTAR.
And welcome to hour number two of the Computer Corner. We're talking about botnets and how... Actually, we kind of got sidetracked, didn't we? We started talking about botnets and then started answering a bunch of questions. But we're talking about this insidious nature of spreading malware and viruses and spam through unsuspecting regular old computer users' computers. They're called botnets, and you can get all the information about what they are, how they work, how you get infected, how you can tell in some detail. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later here, especially for you technically astute folks. We're going to talk about how to use the netstat command in Windows to really examine what kind of connections are being made between your computer and the outside world. But It is a problem, and educating yourself is very important, and those videos should help you. So before we go any further, though, it's time for the Geek Speak of the Week. Every week we try to bring you a term, a phrase, an acronym, an abbreviation that's thrown around in the tech world as if it's common knowledge. When we know it's not.
In this week's Geek Speak of the Week,
we're going old school. We're going way back.
IRC.
IRC. What's that stand for?
Internet Relay Chat.
And how's that work?
Well, it's It's a form of communication that allows people to talk one-on-one or to many other connections. And
it's just like a channel that's set up between you and somebody else on the internet, and that's how like chat sessions and
AIM, iChat, or any of that stuff that people are using out there. And this is also how the those bot herders are getting their bots spread out. And
well, that's how they communicate, and that's one of the reasons why. It's the reason why we chose that for the Geek Speak of the Week this week. But that's once that botnet agent gets in your computer. Remember, I was talking about how it can basically follow along these things that have already been approved. That's why it's so hard to detect these things, is because it's using that IRC connection that's already being used by AIM and whoever else that's already been approved. Ooh, not good. So, you know what? Before we go any further, then, let's just talk about the semi-technical way. Again, this is, I don't like to get into really technical stuff on the show because it's really not in the core, but this is such an important thing. Those of you that are semi-technical, you're familiar and comfortable with the command line in Windows. You can go and look at, and the best way to do this is to restart your machine so that it's clean and you know exactly what it's going to be, you know, what automatically loads. I'm sorry, I'm multitasking here. What's my type? restart the machine and go to the command line. And again, I'm not going step by step because I'm not intending these instructions to be for the average novice that's never.
So what you're looking for is netstat information.
Correct. What you type in is you get to a command line and type in netstat, netstat, space, minus van. It's verbose. I can't remember what the other switches are for. But basically, it's going to list out every connection, every IP connection. It's this, you know, what's the status of my network, basically. It's going to look at all the connections and give you the status of each of those connections. So there's four columns in there. One that talks about the protocol, which is TCP. Technical, forget about it, doesn't matter. Local address means in your machine, this is the address for this particular connection. And then the foreign address is the connection either within the machine or outside of the machine or on your local network. So and then the last column tells you what the state is for that connection. Again, this is getting a little technical, and if you really want to get into this, several of the videos that I've posted to kind of get into this. Well, what the netstat command will allow you to do, and again, I'm speaking to those technically astute folks that understand this, this is how you can quickly examine a machine and go, okay, there's cause for concern. What you're going to do is look at all of the connections that say established. In other words, that means this computer has established a connection with this foreign IP address, which could be anywhere in the world, it could be on your local network, whatever it is. Those of you that are aware of the differences between local IP addresses and public IP addresses will easily be able to tell which ones you need to look at. But basically what you want to do is do a lookup of the IP address for all the established connections to see where the heck this connection is being performed. So if you were a LogMeIn customer and you looked up the IP address that the LogMeIn connection was using, you'd see that it's pointing at a LogMeIn server or a LogMeIn domain or something of that nature. Basically, this is a way for you to figure out, is there an agent lying dormant in my machine that has been basically designed to establish a connection with the command and control center? And so by looking up all these IP addresses for these connections, why you want to do it after a fresh restart. That's how you would, on a technical level, go in and try to figure this out. Once you have the IP address, if you go to aaron.net, as an example for an IP lookup website, you can basically put the IP address in there. It'll tell you who owns it or where it goes. If it ends up somebody in Bulgaria or the Philippines or somewhere, like, ooh, you might have a botnet.
Now, is there a simple application for those of you that, or for like people like myself that are looking at this and thinking, this looks like the Matrix?
It is the Matrix, and this is where this, you know, I always have a problem deciding whether I want to talk about this on the air or not, because it's really, there's no simple way. It's like asking, you know, doctors, is there a simple way to figure out if I, you know, need brain surgery or, you know, no, you have to go through the training to understand the basics to be able to properly diagnose this stuff, and that's where, you know, again, if the links that I've posted, in the resource center in today's radio show aren't enough to educate you. In other words, you can't run with the information that's there. It means you need to go find a friend that is technical. And you guys, everybody out there knows somebody that's that ultra nerdy guy. And you can point them to these resources and have them look at this thing. Or if you want to have a professional organization check your machine, whatever. It doesn't. This is just one way of doing it. So this is one way that we could, if you brought it in to us in our stores during our free checkup, you know, if there was a suspicious, and there's other ways that you can say, hey, there's a suspicious signals or symptoms on this computer that might indicate that you've been infected with, you know, any number of maladies. But if there's a concern about a botnet, then this is a quick way to really look. Again, it's not a absolute guaranteed way because some botnets that are dormant don't establish a connection. So if that has not happened at the time that you're looking, then you won't see it. So you can see how complex this becomes. And I don't want this. There's no black and white. There's no one size fits all. And there's no absolutes because no matter what I tell you today, this is all common knowledge in the botnet world. And they know we need to find a way to make it even more difficult for even technical people to find us because there's money involved in there and they're going to figure it out.
Well, I think you've definitely raised people's paranoia levels today.
Good.
So,
well, again, the tools are there. You have technical resources, whether they're professional or personal. It's worth adding this to your checkup cycles, which I know most of you don't do anyway, but when you're having your machine looked at, that this is another way for folks, your friends, the technical people you trust, to make sure that you don't have a botnet lurking somewhere within your computer. And understand, most of the botnet world is all focused on Windows, not because Windows is not as secure. It's because there's more people that run Windows. It's a simple matter of numbers. So we'll get into a little more of that in a second here. We're going to go to break. When we come back, great question from Steve about what do I need to be able to start writing applications for the iPhone. He wants to make some money. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Computer Corner. And for those of you that your brain is numb from that last segment, I apologize. It wasn't designed to educate the non-technical. It was really just kind of a explanation for those that are technical out there. And I know we got all kinds of people listening to the show. It's a tool for them to use that they can then go check their friends and family's computers. And, you know, if we can get everybody up to speed on, in the technical world, how to go look for this thing, these things, then the more people that know in the technical world, the more likely that the people that are non-technical that then go tap on somebody's shoulder going, oh, yeah, I heard about that.
Well, so, together as a collective group, we can kill spam.
Or what you can do now is the resources we've posted, along with the audio archives, which I'm pretty sure this week's segment, the last 2 weeks that we've had some editing issues. So we'll make sure that we get the editing correct on this one and try to fix the last couple of weeks. But you'll be able to have them listen to the show in the archives to see as well, or check out one of the videos or read the column that I have in on the website. And it was in today's East Valley Tribune as well that talks about the NetStat utility. Again, if you're one of those that was listening, I'll say this slowly and you can write it down. NetStat, NETSTAT, then a space, minus sign, V as in Victor, A as in Apple, N as in Nancy. That's the command. Hand that to your tech friends and have them run it so that they can take it from there. And they just want to look up where all those established connections are going. All right. Let's talk to Steve, who's got the economic stimulus idea of the century. Forget whatever Obama's thinking about and Congress. And we have the economic stimulus package to beat all economic stimulus packages, right?
I hope so. At least for me, I hope so. I'm a PC guy, and I was doing a little research about how to write an application for the iPhone.
You mean you're a Windows guy?
I'm a PC guy. I've never really played with a Mac since probably high school.
PC stands for personal computer. Macs are personal computers.
I'm a Windows guy.
Sorry. Pet peeve of mine.
No worries. I was doing a little bit of research on how to write an application for the iPhone, considering I've never written an application before in my life.
Yes.
And I was, in my reading, it said that I needed a Mac, and I needed to get certain tools, but it didn't really go into what tools I needed.
Yeah, you need an Intel-based Mac running OS X.
Okay, so Intel OS X.
Okay.
Is there any model that you'd recommend?
It doesn't really matter as long as those are the only requirements.
I mean, you could start out with a Mac Mini, and those are the cheaper models out there. If you're going to purchase a Mac Mini, though, I recommend upgrading the memory in the computer. That will help with the performance.
Okay, but let's say I want to spend a little bit more than a Mac Mini. I mean, actually have, you know, a decent Mac.
When you step up from a Mac Mini, you go into an iMac.
Okay.
They have both 20 and 24-inch models, and they're both good machines. It's just a matter of screen size, how much desktop real estate you want.
Okay.
And then, of course, processor speed, the amount of video RAM in the computer.
And none of that's really germane to developing apps for iPhones.
Okay, perfect.
Because iPhones, remember, you're going to be developing for a target that's a really slow, tiny, not very powerful device.
Okay.
So your programming needs are, you know, what you're running, and it's got a little, there's a simulator package. By the way, you were saying you didn't know what you needed. We're going to give Geek Speak number two for the show.
I figured.
You need Apple's iPhone SDK, which stands for...
Software Development Kit.
There you go, Software Developers Kit. And that you can get to that by going to the Apple website and just type in iPhone SDK, or go to Google, type in iPhone SDK.
Okay.
And it'll take you right to that website where you can just download. It's a free download.
And currently there is a whopping 15,000-plus applications available.
Now, here's the deal. This is my understanding of how this works. And for those of you that are avid listeners, we ended the show a couple weeks ago with my dismay of I thought iPhone people were pretty sophisticated, and I think I found evidence that states maybe not so much. But when a couple weeks ago, the number one iPhone application in the App Store was something called iFart. But let that be the impetus for you, because that means this guy probably sold hundreds of thousands of these at $2 or $3 a piece. He probably did okay. So, I mean, it's definitely...
Where do you go for tutorials on how to write? I mean...
It's all right there. That SDK will have all the how-tos and the references and everything.
Yeah, they've got video references and...
Now, you won't... Audio. Just because you write an application, though, it doesn't mean that it's going to make it to the App Store, because there's a approval process that has to go through. So, you may submit it. It may or may not make it. It may or may not make it onto the featured list. I mean, there's a lot of... things that are out of your control are going to determine whether you actually end up getting into the App Store. So keep that in mind as well. If you check out the forums that are out there on iPhone SDK developer forums, you'll talk to a lot of other people that have been there and done that. So hopefully that helps. We'll be back with some more here. Computer Corner, stay tuned. And reaching into the Computer Corner email bag. Virtually. Gene writes, did I hear this on your program? I'm assuming from last week's discussion, that if you have a Mac and install on it some Windows programs, that your Mac would then be susceptible to viruses just like a Windows PC.
I would say absolutely.
Well, what you have to do is actually load Windows, which you can do on the Intel-based Mac machines. You can actually create two different machines within one. You can actually have the Mac operating system on there, and you can also install like Windows XP or Windows Vista on the machine, and then go back and forth between the two. If you do install the Windows operating system, Gene, on a Mac, yes, you are exposing the Windows side of your computer to all the Windows viruses and what have you.
Absolutely.
Because it's no different.
And there is a company out there, Intego, that makes a virus software application that actually supports both platforms in one package.
So you install it and it protects both. So if you're a dual OS.
So if you're running any of those virtualization software applications, Parallels or VMware, if you're doing boot camp, which is restarting the computer, you can have virus barrier on one side of the computer, and then Bitdefender, which is the software that comes with the package as well, on the Windows side.
To help keep that. Because I know theoretically it's possible. My understanding is that the Windows partition can see the Apple partition.
Yeah, actually, if you're running Parallels and you're looking at your Mac desktop, it's kind of transparent. It actually shows through on the Windows platform as well.
Yeah. So if the but follow my logic here. If the Windows side is the susceptible side,
mm-hmm.
and it can see the Apple partition,
mm-hmm.
theoretically, an infection on a Windows machine, if it's a specific type of code that says, by the way, look to see if there's an Apple OS X partition out there. If there is, go and attack it, or go and infect it, or go plant this file on it so that the next time the Mac OS boots, you know, I can attack it, whatever. Theoretically.
In theory, yeah, yeah. I would say sure.
But it hasn't happened.
But it hasn't happened.
And you know why it hasn't happened? Not enough people run dual boot systems for somebody to go, oh, look at this juicy target I have now.
It's not as exciting to those people that are trying to, you know, put these malicious codes onto other people's computers.
Exactly. Now, take that into today's discussion about botnets. And again, last week they talked about, are Macs really safe or that kind of thing. The sheer numbers mean more so than anything else. Because if just as many people running the Mac OS as were running the Windows platform, more people would be trying to find holes and ways to take advantage of people that are running the Mac OS. And that, unfortunately, is going to happen as more and more people adopt. So right now, it's absolutely a cleaner, safer environment. But that's not the only reason, and don't think that that's forever, and it has anything to do with the fact that, I mean, it's written in Unix, right, on the Unix platform,
yeah.
Which is full of holes. There's been exploits for Unix. I mean, that's where rootkits came from, right? So it's certainly, you know, it's just a matter of time before it becomes an issue. But when it comes to botnets, if I'm trying to infect as many computers as I can and as quickly as I can across the internet, of course I'm going to target Windows machines.
Now, what about botnets for cell phones?
I'm not aware of one, but I would.
It's another operating system, basically, when you're running something like a BlackBerry or an iPhone. I mean, an iPhone's OS is a slimmed-down Mac OS.
Right.
So, I mean, if you really want to attack everybody as a whole, wouldn't you go to the cell phone, which everybody carries in their pocket on a daily basis?
No, because cell phones are a lot less sophisticated. Even though there are many versions of, they don't have all of the sophistication that a computer has, and so and generally don't have the data circuits and those kinds of things. So it's not near as attractive. Now, is that going to change as time goes on? I can almost guarantee that's going to be the case. It's coming on. So quickly to review, what you can do to protect yourself from this whole botnet issue. One, we sound like parrots. Windows updates, antivirus updates, anti-spyware updates. You got to keep those things. When your little yellow shield shows up and says you have updates to be installed, don't ignore it. It's important. This is how you stay one step ahead of those guys, because they're looking for people that are not updating their computer, and that's the easiest targets that are out there. Two, if you have especially teenagers in your home, they're not afraid of anything. They'll download anything. They'll install anything. And the hackers know that. They're going to come after you through your kids because they know your kids aren't afraid of it, and they're more likely to go out there and try to download a piece of software or music or video.
Kids are just click happy.
Doesn't matter. They're indestructible, right? They're invincible. And they treat their computers the same way. And again, we're speaking from experience. Our stores deal with this every single day, and there's a common component when there's active, what we call screenagers, right? Very tech-savvy teenagers in the home. There's a very direct correlation between that and rampant infection and those kinds of things. Last week I wrote about file sharing networks. Mm-hmm. That's a big, big point of exposure. So mom and dad, if you don't understand this and you don't even know what a file sharing network looks like and what software looks like, you got to educate yourself, and then you need to look at your computers to see if any of these software programs have been loaded on your computer, because if they have, this is a huge open gateway to all kinds of infections, not just botnets.
Yeah, and I know Brandon and I had a big discussion about that weeks past on peer-to-peer file sharing, and we got a lot of calls about that. And
it's bad.
Yeah.
It's bad news.
And again, it's just people going click happy and just going places where they have really no idea what they're downloading. And then if you look at the viruses that are currently available on the Mac platform, they're all Trojans that are attacking pirated software applications.
Exactly. Now, again, these guys that write this code are not stupid. We're way past the script kiddies and what I call the ha-ha hackers. You know, in the early days when it was the stone virus, it was, your computer's been stoned. Yeah, it didn't do anything. It was just goofy. Or turn the screen upside down or make a gurgling sound and make it like your hard drive's going out or something. Those days are long, long gone because there's money involved. And when it comes to botnets, these guys, the bot herders, want to infect as many computers as possible, show whoever wants to rent their network, right? And so the bigger their network is, the more they can charge by the minute, and they make a fortune in the underworld selling access to, here's access to all these people's computers, and you can do whatever you want for 20 minutes.
So we've gone from agriculture to bot herding.
It is. It is. And unfortunately, most of the bot herders are not here. They're on other parts of the world. And they could really care less about our laws and what have you. So it is a serious problem. There's lots and lots of education on our website. This is one of those good bookmark sites for down the road. You want to go back and refresh your memory. DataDoctors.com/radio. And then there's a specific radio segment, or this particular show number will be on there as well, that you can work off of, or take a look at our newsletter with all the links in there, datadoctors.com/help. You can see all the advice columns. This is an important issue, folks. Yes, I know it's going to freak a lot of people out because they're hearing these things, but would you rather not know about this stuff, or would you rather, okay, now be aware of it and say, okay, I need to go talk to my tech friends to take a look at my computer, or take it in somewhere, have somebody just double check to make sure. Because I have three teenagers, and I have a high speed internet connection, and my computers are running really slow. And by the way, some of the symptoms that you might have a botnet agent running in your computer is you're not doing anything. You're actually not even on the internet, and all your internet lights and all your things that tell you that there's network activity are flashing like crazy. That means something's going on between your computer and something on the internet. Wait a minute, it's not me. Well.
Something.
Probably should find out. It could be your antivirus program. Could be Windows Update. Could be any number of things. But that's just a quick way for a non-technical person to go, maybe there's a problem here. Same thing with the hard drive grinding away. It could be an auto-scheduled program that's supposed to run and clean up and work on your machine.
Yeah.
Or it could be a botnet doing its thing.
Yeah, like, well, on the Mac platform when it's being journaled.
Mm-hmm.
And it's grinding away during that journaling time. And then after that, it's idle and quiet, like normal.
So, again, these are all things that we've got posted in the various education areas on our website, datadoctors.com/radio, for all of the resources that we have posted. Just, it's awareness. And if you don't understand it, you're not sure, this is when you reach out to your tech friends, reach out to a professional organization, somebody to take a look at it. Most people, most organizations, if somebody comes to your store and says, I think I have a problem, you don't charge to look at it, right?
No. If we're going to go over it and give them some recommendations based on our experiences.
Yeah, same thing at Data Doctors. You bring it in. We're going to take a look at it. You're concerned about it. Whatever. I mean, this is where we can take a look at it and say, okay, yeah, you've got six different file sharing programs, and you know this BitTorrent. You got massive exposure because of all the stuff that's installed. You have somebody, and it usually is tied to the behavior of one of the users in your home or business, and that behavior is very easily discovered by technical people by looking at what's installed on the computer. Right?
Sure.
I mean, you can almost tell right away just by looking at the kind of programs.
And we have logs to go back to as well. So.
Well, you can even get to that level, but usually just by looking at what programs have been installed, it kind of gives you a pretty good idea what kind of person, what kind of things are going on there.
The computer doesn't lie.
Exactly. 602-277-5827 is the number. We're coming up on a break. Arnold, if you don't mind holding, we'll take you next. Got a couple lines open, 602-277-5827. Or if you prefer, you can email us through the website, datadoctors.com/radio, where you can click on one of the links that says ask a question or make a suggestion or what have you. Very common question, Monica wanted to know, hey, my antivirus program's just about up. I've been using Norton 2003 in Windows XP. Should I move up to Norton 2009 or try a different software?
Just about up.
You can continue to get those updates. Here's the issue, Monica. If you're running 2003, I'm going to have to assume you probably have an older machine. If you have an older machine and you put one of today's big monstrous antivirus programs on, you're probably going to hate it. That Norton 2009 is going to be a slug compared to 2003.
Well, because they're a lot more intrusive. They put they put bits and pieces of information all over your computer system.
So we like the WebRoot package even for especially for older machines because it's not as obtrusive to the operating system. WebRoot.com if you want to see, and specifically the antivirus and anti-spyware program, not their do-everything network security package, just antivirus, anti-spyware, for those of you in a similar situation. So hopefully that helps. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to take some more phone calls and talk some more about botnets and see if we can't freak you out a little bit more. It's Ken with Data Doctors and Lewis with Mac Media back right after this. Welcome back to the Computer Corner. Quick question here in our inbox. Tom writes, is Windows 7 all it's cracked up to be? When will it be released? Is it worth trying out the beta? Beta being the test version, pre-release version. Well, first of all, Windows 7 is the next version of Windows after Windows Vista. It's primarily based on the Windows Vista system, so it's a enhanced version of Windows Vista, and it'll be one that it takes out a lot of stuff people complained about in Windows Vista and adds new stuff that people will probably end up complaining about.
But it has a different name.
Yeah. Well, so it's the next version.
Helps.
I mean, Windows Vista is significantly better than Windows XP. There's no way that anybody semi-technical or even remotely technical could argue that point.
Yeah,
it is technically superior.
Again, I have no qualms with Windows Vista.
No, I'm just saying, for those people that are Windows XP, the reason people say Windows XP is better is it's comfortable and it works with their old stuff. And that's where most of the problem lies. When you get Windows Vista and try to mix old stuff, old hardware, old printers, old scanners, old, you know, whatever, with a new operating system, then you start to have problems. And it takes a while for everybody to weed through all that. And we're kind of there. I mean, Vista's as stable as it's going to be. It's just fine. We're going to go through this again with Windows Vista, or Windows 7. Tom, the bottom line is it won't be released for probably another year. And just like every operating system that comes out, being one of the first to install it and use it on a machine you care about is probably not a really sharp idea. And as far as beta testing, I mean, if you're a developer, if you're really into this stuff, you know, you got the extra time, you want to do it. I mean, when you say, is it worth trying? I don't even, you know, since a beta version is a not finished product, what you're doing is you're volunteering to help them figure out what the problems are so that they can include that in the finished product. So that's the whole point of downloading beta software. Beta software is really popular with the, you know, the hardcore tech people because they want to talk about, oh, yeah, I had the beta, you know, whatever.
Well, and those are the folks with the secondary machine lying
Correct.
Around.
Yeah, you don't ever want to put a beta operating system on something you care about as far as a functioning computer. It's a secondary computer that, you know, if it doesn't work, if it crashes, it has a problem, so be it. So hopefully that helps you, Tom. You're way ahead of the curve when it comes to migrating. The average person migrating to Windows 7 is we're still seeing people that haven't migrated to Windows Vista and probably going to wait and jump right over Vista and get into Windows 7 and basically end up in the same basket. But it is what it is.
Well, I can tell you when we install Boot Camp or, like I said, Parallels or VMware on any of the Mac systems, we have a heck of a time trying to sell someone Vista over Windows XP.
When you're doing the dual boot. And it's mostly just from familiarity and whatever. So, hey, by the way, this week's newsletter, quick tip for you folks that love Firefox. If you're like me, a lot of times when you're trying to find something on the Internet, you want to you search something in Google, right? It takes you to the page, and the word that you used in Google is what you're looking for on the page, the specific word. So now you got to scan down or go to the Control F or Find or whatever. You can set up Firefox so that if you're typing anything and you're not in a form, Firefox assumes you're trying to search for that word instantaneously. So it's really cool for those of you that do that a lot. I do that a lot because, you know, research and that kind of thing.
Sure.
So that's our tip of the week. If you're a Vista user, our head whack of the week is tip for those of you that have a tough time with the control key. So pictures, you know, you got 600 pictures and you want to tag 20 of them to upload to your picture sharing site or whatever, right? In order to pick the random photos, you hold the control key down while you're clicking. Now, one errant click, or if you forget and you lift up the control key and then you click on something, it
Back
undoes,
to the beginning.
Right? It wipes everything out and you're going nuts. Vista has the option for you to permanently have a place where you have a little checkbox that's blank by every picture or every piece of music, whatever, in the thumbnail mode. And so then when you want to do multi-file selections, you just simply click on the checkbox and you don't have to worry about I lifted my finger off the control key or whatever. So it's a neat little option there for Vista users.
Sounds like a nice feature.
Also a warning in there about the bogus economic stimulus emails. Apparently they're using this phishing scam as if it was a, hey, get your piece of the economic stimulus by applying for whatever and getting fooling people into giving up personal information. So,
well, apparently they were going to give me another 100,000.
Is that all you got?
According to the email.
Oh. Well, the Nigerians are trying to bail me out. there's also a comparison of four of the CNET did a comparison of the four different online tax filing services for those of you that want to think about moving to a web-based tax preparation software. Gmail's announced multiple inbox capability now for Gmail. So check that out. Gmail's just phenomenal to begin with. That's a really good one. There's also a link to my CNN video last week talking about the RIAA, the music industry, working with your ISP to try to crack down on music piracy. So, and of course, a couple of other things in there, including this week's show theme and links to the resources.
Well,
so
the music industry decided it's the CISP's problem now.
Yeah, well, that was a long story. Lewis, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And those of you who missed the show, you can listen to an archived version in a couple of days here at datadoctors.com/radio. We appreciate it all and see you all next week.